Evening, welcome everyone to the Simple Actions Group of Alcoholics. My name is Jason and I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Jason.
Housekeeping, we only will be recording and publishing the audio portion of this meeting. You can sign up for email or listen to previous recorded meetings on our website, simpleactions.net. For those who care to join us, let us open the meeting with a serenity prayer. God.
God. Grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change things I can.
The Simple Action Group wishes to extend a warm welcome to all in attendance today. These premises are non-smoking. Our group is welcome to use this room and the restrooms exclusively. Newcomers, is there anyone in their first 30 days of sobriety? We would like to welcome you. On Zoom, you can raise your hand and someone will chat with you on Zoom. At this time, please silence your cell phones. Also, we respectfully ask that those present please refrain from unnecessary moving around the room. This will keep distractions and disturbances to a minimum and allow everyone to listen uninterrupted. This group practices the spiritual foundations of anonymity, singleness of purpose, and effective sponsorship. It is the purpose of this meeting to carry that clear message and to focus on precisely how to recover from the illness of alcoholism by taking AA Simple Actions. AA Preamble. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of people who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution. Does not wish to engage in any controversy. Neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. The format of this meeting is an open big book step study. As a group, we recognize the power of one alcoholic identifying with another alcoholic, sharing their experience, strength, and hope from the book Alcoholics Anonymous. We encourage you to engage in conversation and ask questions after the meeting pertaining to the step discussed tonight. This evening, we are discussing Step 12, Part 1. Please welcome our panel this evening, Mike M. and John S. I will read the first paragraph on page 89, and then the panel will share for a few minutes on each of the readings. Step 12, having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, we try to carry this message to alcoholics and to practice these principles in all of our affairs. Page 89, practical experience shows that nothing will so much ensure immunity from drinking as intensive work with other alcoholics. It works when other activities fail. This is our 12th suggestion. Carry this message to other alcoholics. You can help when no one else can. You can secure their confidence when others fail. Remember that they are very ill. Life will take on new meaning. To watch people recover, to see them help others, to watch loneliness vanish, to see a fellowship grow up about you, to have a host of friends. This is an experience you must not miss. We know you will not want to miss it. Frequent contact with newcomers and with each other is the bright spot of our lives. And I think, John, you're going to start us off.
Hey, I'm John. I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, John.
Man, there's so much in step 12. And in those paragraphs you just read. Before I get into that, I just want to give you a little summary of my drinking and what brought me in here. I never drank normally. I always, you know, from the very first time I drank, it was always, you know, excessively. And that started, you know, actually the first time I drank was when I was like 5 years old. My brother, you know, gave me champagne on New Year's Eve and I drank the whole bottle. And it was like, that was a preamble for what was to come. And I just had no idea. And from then on, when I got a little older, when I was basically when I was 15 is when I found alcohol on my own. And it was always to excess. It was always, it was always a problem. And I never knew why. I never knew why I drank differently than my friends and, you know, everybody around me. And this went on for years. And then the consequences started happening. I started getting in trouble with the law and started having all these different things happening in my life. I had a kid when I was 18. And so I'm a young man starting a family with my high school sweetheart. And, it was just, I was trying to be these things for for her. I was trying to be these things for myself. You know, I came from a broken home. My dad still lives in Scotland. You know, I moved over here when I was a kid and I never grew up with him. And so I knew that when I became a dad, I wanted to be the best dad I could be. And as a young man trying to do that, but also trying to, you know, be a teenager. I mean, I'm 18 years old. I look at pictures of me when I had my daughter, which is, she's now 17 years old. And it's mind blowing. Like, I am a child. My wife is a child and we've got this little baby bundle of joy in our hands. And it's just, it's crazy. You know, so it's just like, that's where, I had all these, you know, dreams and aspirations of what I wanted to do, but alcohol just kept on getting in the way. And that was my life. That was my story. Just, it was another attempt, another failure, because I always wanted to get sober. I always wanted to stay sober. I just didn't really know how to. And I didn't want what you guys had. I came into the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous when I was 19 on a DUI. And that was just the beginning. That was just the tip of the iceberg. Cause then it was just more trouble, more, you know, coming in here, more trying to do it my own way. And my way does not work. That's for damn sure. The last time when I came in, this last time around, I was just at a point in my life where I knew I couldn't keep going on the way I was going. I couldn't keep drinking the way I was because it was killing me, but I didn't know how to stop. I didn't know. I couldn't stop. I couldn't imagine my life with or without alcohol. I was at the jumping off place, as the book calls it. And I was completely, you know, just lost. And Alcoholics Anonymous was the last stop for me. I needed what you guys had. I was willing to do whatever it took. And I came into the rooms and I raised my hand and said, I'm new and I need help. And Alcoholics Anonymous, the hand of Alcoholics Anonymous was there for me, like it always had been, waiting for me. I just had refused it up until that point. And when I actually asked for help and did the hardest thing I ever did was ask another man to help me and ask someone to be my sponsor. I'm just so glad that, you know, the hand was there. And I met my sponsor, who was properly armed with the facts about himself. And as we, you know, getting on to the reading, you know, you can help when no one else can. And he understood everything about me. And I felt that confidence that he knew what I was talking about as well. And he started reading this book with me. And I start to learn about the, you know, the phenomenon of craving and why I never drank normally. And then I start to learn about the obsession of the mind. And that's why I can never stop. And I can never stay stopped. That was the real problem. Drinking is not my problem. It's not drinking is the problem. It's when I stop drinking is when I don't know what the hell to do with my life. And I always go back to it. I always get pushed back into the arms of alcohol because it's always waiting for me. And I took these steps rapidly with my sponsor, and that is the most amazing thing that's ever happened to me in my life. It's nothing that I ever wanted. I didn't want to be a part of this fellowship. I didn't want to take these steps. I didn't want to do any of that stuff, but I didn't want to die from alcohol, and I didn't want to be my dad and lose everything that ever meant anything to me. I didn't want to lose my family. I knew that much. I just didn't know what to do. And when I finally accepted that help and I was gifted that gift of desperation, and I was willing to do whatever it took. My sponsor made it very clear that half measures avail us nothing, that we got to work this thing. And he held me accountable to it. And he rapidly took me through these steps. When we got finished with the steps, he made it very clear that if I don't do this with another man, what he just did with me, that I've wasted his time. I wasted the time of Alcoholics Anonymous. I've wasted my own time. And I took that to heart, and practical experience shows that nothing will so much insure with an I. That's our insurance policy. He made that clear as well. This is our insurance policy from drinking. You know, I've heard people ask me, you know, what's my relapse prevention program? What do I do? I said, it's working with others. It's staying engaged in this fellowship, staying engaged in this program. It's sharing. Just sharing at a meeting, sharing my experience, strength, and hope, because I was that hopeless alcoholic that had nowhere else to turn, that I truly was hopeless. And this program, these 12 steps have restored me, and I've recovered from alcoholism, from that seemingly hopeless state of mind and body that the book talks about, you know. And now I get to, you know, do these things. I get to give back in a way that I could never give back to Alcoholics Anonymous, what has been given to me. You know, I can hold my head up high. I can finally be the man that I've always wanted to be. I always thought Alcoholics Anonymous was weakness. And I was so weak before, you know, false pride and ego and all that getting in the way. And I thought that, you know, I could figure it out and all that. And I don't want to ramble, but last thing, my sponsor told me, I don't got to figure anything out. It's already been figured out. It's right here in this book, you know, and working with others is the bright spot of my life today. And a fellowship has grown up around me. That's just, it's nothing that I ever wanted, but oh my God, it's amazing. And it's saved my life every single day. And it's only by the grace of God and the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous that I get to live today and not just exist. That's all I got on that.
Thanks, Jimmy. I'm Mike Midget, recovered alcoholic. John was talking. I was like, damn, this is going to be hard because we're from the same sponsorship line. So we're going to repeat everything each other says because it's all out of the big book. And I was also thinking of how blessed I am to have an opportunity to sit in this chair because of the men that died for me in this program. So many people don't even get a chance to sit in one of these chairs. And that's so crazy to think of. You know, I just got to pray that I keep the willingness to stay in this chair. I'm going to start off by validating that I'm an alcoholic because some of y'all haven't heard me speak. You might not know. I could just be some guy up here and you're like, he's not even an alcoholic. I'm not going to listen to him. Just like the book, the reading said, you can secure their confidence when others fail. So I've got a sobriety date of February 14th, 2017. I've got a sponsor. He knows he's my sponsor. I call him every day. He sponsors a bunch of people. He is a sponsor he calls every day. I have had the opportunity and the great blessing to be able to help a lot of men in this program as well. Now, the home group, it's the Sandbridge Big Book group. We meet Tuesday nights at 8 p.m. As Justin would say, it's the best home group out. It's better than yours. And just so you know, I drive this length to get to all the meetings. So y'all come out and check us out. You have no excuse. You can drive that length as well. It's a pretty drive. I have a couple of positions at that group. I was the treasurer, not anymore. I open the meeting. I set the meeting up. And I also act as the liaison between the meeting and the church. And apparently Al-Anon too. Because we have an Al-Anon meeting that meets there at the same time we do. I'm a firm believer, and the further I get in this program, the more it secures this for me, that I was born an alcoholic. Nothing external made me flip a switch one day to become an alcoholic. You know, my parents, I was born to a nice, loving family, man. I had the best parents, and sometimes when I speak, people are like, damn, your parents must have not given a shit, and that's totally not the fact. So anything I say, I like to get that off the table because I came from a great family. Both my parents, they have my older brother. They quit everything, smoking, drinking, done. Boom. Just like that. Don't know if they were alcoholic. May have been, may not. I don't know. Dad showed some signs of being a dry drunk. Who am I to say? You know, my mom got real sick when I was young. I was 8 years old. She got diagnosed with terminal cancer, and back then was a little different than now. They just put her on a hospital bed in her living room. So we came home, and that's what me and my brother came home to every day. And it was a tough time. And my dad worked all the time. He wasn't around a lot, trying to provide and keep a roof over our heads. And, you know, about a half a year into the sickness, my brother found his solution. You know, he found that he could take the medication, the morphine and stuff, and he could use it on himself. So when I was about 8 going on 9, he gave me his solution through my arm. And, you know, I think he was doing it because he loved me. He wanted me to feel better. He knew I was struggling. I don't think he was trying to hurt me or anything. But, you know, this continued. And when I was that young, so the government started putting me on stuff to keep me going. They had put me on medicine. And at 11, I discovered alcohol. And it was so great because you could steal it really easily. When you're 11, stealing from drug dealers isn't that easy. I was a big kid, but not that big. And you know what I noticed from the first time I put that shit in my mouth? I loved it. From that time till the moment alcohol stopped working for me, it did the same thing. I put it to my lips. I felt it go down and warm up. Take a sigh and my shoulders drop, and I could do what I wanted to do, right? It filled that void I always had, and it made me somebody. And I loved it, man. I loved it right up till the time I didn't. From the time I was 11 to the time I was 34, like John just said, my life was summed up as one more attempt, one more failure. I did the rehabs. I was in juvenile a lot when I was a kid. I went to jail. I died multiple times, came back to life. Never knew the reason. Now I do. I had experienced it all, you know, and in rehabs they were always like jails, institution, and death. Stay away from people and all this stuff. And I thought, you know, I'm like, damn, getting sober must suck. I got to avoid everything in life. And, you know, but the point is I wasn't scared of those things because I had already experienced them. You weren't going to scare me into Alcoholics Anonymous. And this whole time I'd come in here to get the monkey off my back, or the city of Virginia Beach would send me in here. And I'd be the first person up till the day I took the steps that would tell you Alcoholics Anonymous doesn't work, because I didn't do Alcoholics Anonymous. My sponsor says Alcoholics Anonymous isn't for people that need or want Alcoholics Anonymous. It's for people that do it. I got to do it. So come to the end of this stretch, I'll tell you what my last little bit of sobriety looked like and when the 12th step of Alcoholics Anonymous came into my life. I was at my house. I hadn't been to work for a couple of weeks, and I'd never missed work. I always worked. That was my security, man. I worked. I provided for my family. Mm-hmm. But my family had already, I'd already thrown them to the street. So I'm in this house by myself. And I woke up one morning with the same feeling, that terror, remorse, hopelessness, fear. And I was like, I'm never doing this again. The same thing I said honestly throughout my life millions of times. Honest, but I could never figure out why it didn't stick. And I never even really thought about why it didn't stick till I came in here. So I lasted 37 hours without a drink, and it was miserable. It was horrible. Irritable, restless, and discontent, the book tells you about. I was just, I couldn't take it. And my best thinking had me put pictures of my kids, which I don't even know if I fucking loved them at the point. Obviously not. I threw them on the street. And I put a gun in my mouth and squeezed the trigger. It didn't go off. Shut the shell, squeezed the trigger. It didn't go off. And I'm ripping it apart. I threw it in the lake out back, and I drop on my knees and I'm screaming up in the air. For the first time in my life, a little thought came in my head. So what is my purpose here? I can't even kill myself. And that's when my door got kicked in by a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. Not because I told anyone. I didn't even know I was going to try to kill myself. But because I hadn't gone to work in 2 weeks, that was very abnormal for me. He came in my room with the big book, and he's looking around. All my mirrors are broken because I can't even look at myself anymore. I'm just an angry, pissed off, worthless, weak person. And he's like, Mike, why don't you read this book? I've tried reading that book. It doesn't do anything. He said, why don't you actually read it, man? And you know, at this point, I was hopeless enough to pick the book up and open it and try to read it. I couldn't read it. I had liver failure at the time. I was shaking. I was foaming at the mouth. It didn't make any sense. But you know what? I kept trying to read it. And I went to this meeting, and this guy was speaking. His message had depth and weight, right? And for the first time in my life, other than my mother, I said, I can trust this man because of that line. You can secure their confidence when others failed. Going through all the shrinks and all the rehabs and all this stuff, I'd go into like the shrink's office and see their picture, their sweater vest, and their family. And I'm like, there ain't no way I'm telling this guy nothing, right? This guy spoke for like 8 minutes. And I'm like, oh my gosh, let me grab you after the meeting. So that night I did what I consider the first manly thing of my life. And I asked another grown man on a date for some help. You know, I learned a lot of things through this time, through his 12-step work with me, right? I learned that blank page at the front of the book is me, because that's what he told me. That's what I know about myself. That's what I know about alcoholism. And that's what I know about the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. To this day, I open it. Every time I open the book, I look at that page to remind myself I don't have this figured out. I still don't know anything. You know, he started to explain to me the obsession of the mind, the physical allergy, all the stuff I could relate to, why all those times of honesty I had just got shut off, because all that stuff's beyond my control. And I learned I'm beyond human aid. And he was quick to tell me important things like, hey, Mike, if you come sit in a chair in Alcoholics Anonymous and don't do anything, you're not going to get better. Just like if you sit at a bar and stare at a bottle, you're not going to get drunk. And all this stuff started making sense. And the only thing that got me to this point, because no person can tell an alcoholic to stop and they're just like, okay, I'm going to stop. is alcohol. It was the great persuader. It beat me into a sense of reasonableness. And I think I had about this much time and I lucked out enough to find myself in a chair to where I had that short period of time before I forgot the consequences again and went and do what I always do. He rapidly took me through the 12 steps, told me the same thing John said when I was done. If I don't do this with other men, I've wasted my time. And what happened is, you know, I wish I had this cool story about how I hated God and I was born Catholic and I couldn't do it like I hear in every freaking meeting, but I didn't. The truth is, God has been with me my whole life. If not, I would be dead. I just had to let him in. And that man arranged the meeting. And I woke up the next morning crying because it was the first time since I was 8 years old that I didn't want to put a thing in me. That's a miracle for a guy like me. I think I wasted enough time, but on to the reading. Practical experience. And I had to Google the word practical because I'll murder stuff. I'll murder what it says in the book too and then read right by it and act like I knew what I was talking about. Of or concerned with the actual doing or use of something rather than with theory or ideas. Practical experience. I can't talk about this step if I haven't done this step. These men did this step and wrote about their practical experience. This is a program of doing. It's an action program based on spiritual principles. That's why they could write about it, these 100 men. And that's why I can talk about it now, because I've decided to do that part of the program. Carry the message to other alcoholics. You can succumb. Remember, they're very ill, and this is the problem. I've got this problem a lot. These guys come in, I'm like, oh, fuck, he said this again, or he did this again, or he's bullshitting again, and I start to forget. And I've always got to come back to read this because I forget that blank page, right? I don't know everything. Remember, they're very ill. That's what's beautiful about the 12th step. It brings me right back to where I was. When I was, my sponsor used to call me a babbling idiot. He used to make me share after I took the steps. And I couldn't talk. I wasn't a speaker. It was a blessing. I come up here and do this. I don't even know how I do it anymore. I say a prayer and hope God spills something from my heart. And it's not that hard because I talk out of the book. That way it's practical. It's not my opinion. Opinions are bullshit. And there's a lot of them in AA. Life will take on new meaning. When I was on my knees and I asked myself what my purpose is, that's where I found my purpose. You know, the fellowship's here. I can come in here and take the fellowship all I want. The book tells me I need to build the fellowship I desire. That's not by coming in here and I got to go to a meeting. It's me, me, me. No, I got to be here so I can share and hopefully it helps somebody. And hopefully somebody's struggling. They reach out to me so I can continue my life. 1 through 11, anybody can do and feel a lot better. But when shit gets real in sobriety, the 12th step is what saves my ass. That and only that. Because it gets me out of myself. And then all this other great stuff. And it, you know, it says suggestion. And then it says, you must do this, you know, constantly. Must. You're going to die. You must not miss. Frequent contact with newcomers and with each other is the bright spot of our lives. And that's what it is, man. I don't want to be here on Monday night. You know, through this program, that family I put on the streets is at home waiting for me. They love me and I know how to love them now. But this is the bright shit of my life because it keeps that. If I don't put this first, it's the second thing I'll lose. And then to watch other men have the experience I had, 1 out of 20 or so, maybe, if you're lucky. But to watch that fucking happen, I don't deserve that. It's fucking beautiful. Thanks for letting me share.
Thanks for sharing, Mike.
Thank you, Mike. Thank you both. Next reading's on page 91. See your man alone, if possible. At first, engage in general conversation. After a while, turn the talk to some phase of drinking. Tell him enough about your drinking habits, symptoms, and experiences to encourage him to speak of himself. If he wishes to talk, let him do so. You will thus get a better idea of how you ought to proceed. If he is not communicative, give him a sketch of your drinking career up to the time you quit, but say nothing for the moment of how that was accomplished. If he is in a serious mood, dwell on the troubles liquor has caused you, being careful not to moralize or lecture. If his mood is light, tell him humorous stories of your escapades. Get him to tell some of his.
John Alcoholic?
Yeah.
You know, with Alcoholics Anonymous, we all have stories. We all, you know, been to those meetings where, you know, they get the drunkalogs and people just go on and on and on. And it's like, you know, that's our common problem is we're maniacs. We do crazy, wild shit. But, you know, that's only a part of it. You know, it's like what Mike was saying. When I hear that message of depth and weight, that's what actually makes me want this. You know, I've got a million stories just like you do. You know, we've all done some crazy shit. It's only when you start talking to me about when you start sharing from your heart, you know, the pain, because it was only the pain that made me change. It was only the pain that finally got me over my fear of Alcoholics Anonymous, got me over my fear of the unknown, got me over my fear of leaving my only solution behind to move on to what this program offers and the solution of Alcoholics Anonymous. And it's that message of depth and weight that penetrates my stubbornness and my, you know, my caveman reptilian brain, as Lewis always says, you know. And because that, you know, and that's where I stay, is in that mind frame of fight or flight, is, you know, the fear kept me drunk for a long time. The fear was never enough to get me sober. I had plenty of fear in my life, fear of losing everything. That was a constant fear. It was a constant threat. And what did I do about it? I got drunk about it, because that's the only thing that made that fear go away. You know, I started drinking like the book talks about, because I liked the way it made me feel. But at some point or another in my drinking, I drank because I liked the way it made me not feel anything, you know, because it was the only thing that made my life tolerable. It was the only thing that, you know, that masked that pain, masked that fear for a little while. But I'd wake up and it was still there. And it's only that message of depth and weight that makes me want what you have. Because I'd come into the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous and I'd say, yeah, that shit doesn't work, just like everyone else. You know, just like Mike was saying, yeah, Alcoholics Anonymous, that's not for me. That doesn't really work, because I'd never actually done the work, because I was scared. But, you know, when I hear that message, when I hear what it was like for you, what happened when you're sharing this message, the solution of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I see what, you know, people have done in their lives, that definitely makes me want what you have. And that was what, that's what the difference has been this time around. And now when I get the opportunity to share, and I share that message of depth and weight as well, you know, I share what it was like for me and how, you know, how I wanted these things, that cognitive dissonance, you know, I wanted this, but I couldn't stop this. You know, I wanted these things in my life, but I just didn't know how to get them. And I didn't know how to give up my only solution. And it's like, this program really does work it if you put in the work. That's something that I've learned. You know, when I'm not a speaker, I am an introvert, believe it or not. I don't like doing a lot of the 12-step work that I do. By default, my default answer is like, no, I don't want to do that. But what I've come to learn in this program through my sponsorship, line of sponsorship, is we do things against our better judgment. We're asked to do things that we don't normally want to do. And that's when I should do it, is when I don't want to do it, because I'm doing something for someone else, because I'm getting out of my own way, because I'm quick to get in my own way. And it's always about me. It's always been about selfishness. And how do I get rid of self? It's by doing something for someone else. It's by sharing the message, carrying the message. It's by doing, you know, whatever, making coffee, things like that. And now I get the privilege of, you know, going to the jailhouses and talking to the guys out there, where I was one of them for a long time, you know. And now it's ironic that now I get to be on the other side of that and say, look, I've been here, and it does get better, and it does change if you're willing to put in the work, you know, if you're willing to change. But it takes action, you know, because I can talk about it all day long, but until I actually put my ass into action, nothing was going to change. Our great grand sponsor, he says, different people do different things. The same people do the same things. And I was the same person for a long time. And it was only once I decided to do something different did I start to get different results. And again, this program has saved my life. And now by giving it to others, that has, it just continues to give back, you know, And I used to always think that that was crazy and like woo woo, like, oh, doing to others. And, you know, if you want to be loved, you got to love. If you want to be forgiven, you got to forgive and all that stuff. It's like, yeah, okay. But I'm a selfish person, man. And I'm still very selfish. But this program has at least made me aware of how selfish I am and continuing to practice it, because I practice it as much as I can, but I'll never perfect this and I'm going to constantly fail at it. It's making me become less selfish, I guess. And just, like I said, more aware of it. And I pray every day for God to relieve me of that bondage of self, through the third step and the seventh step prayers. And I get the honor and privilege of doing this work with others. Thanks for letting me share.
Thanks for sharing. Yeah, I feel like we missed a good portion going into this reading. So I'm gonna play God and go back to some that was before us. You know, I like to put myself back in the times when I read this, because there weren't meetings around, the very few, right? They wrote this book because the message is getting kind of like the game of phone you played and elementary school, and it's getting distorted and put it down as they actually did it. And you know, all this is written as if you're going on a 12-step call, right? But now there's so many meetings, somebody stumbles their way in here for their first time, and you get to put all this into action a lot easier. But the page before is telling us how it's wise to wait for them to go on a binge again, right? Because I got to put myself in that man's shoes. I got to remember their L. I got to remember what happened when I'm at that state and someone's nagging me to do it, because my first instinct is, I'm not doing anything, you say? And it tells me, you know, don't deal with them when they're drunk. Leave them alone. And then it tells me, very importantly, his attention should be drawn to you as a person who has recovered, just like the title page tells me, and just like it says. And I mean, you notice when I say my name, I say recovered alcoholic. People come up to me after the meeting all the time. Yeah, Rick. The book tells me I am. I'm always an alcoholic, but I recovered from a hopeless state of mind and body, right? If he doesn't want to see you, never force yourself on him. I mean, sometimes we're so eager to help people, we attack them. And then we're not going to let them leave. And they're trying to get away. They want nothing to do with what we got, but we're just all up in them. And then they're like, fuck that, I'm not going to that meeting again. There were six dudes, wouldn't let me leave. Give me their number and tell them about this. But right before we get to that paragraph, it says, call on him while he's still jittery. He may be more receptive when depressed. And that's what I was talking about before, right? I believe we have this very short window before we forget again, right? It also tells you to ask him if he wants to quit and he's willing to go to any length, right? When I came in this program, my sponsor, when I asked him to sponsor me, he asked me three questions. Are you an alcoholic? So if I said no, he couldn't sponsor me. It's a program of Alcoholics Anonymous. Am I willing to go to any length for victory over alcohol? And he described to me the meaning of many lengths and any lengths. They're different, because I want to do many lengths. I don't want to do any lengths. And what time could I call him? Every day. Those are big three questions. Foaming at my mouth, shaking, can barely talk. And those big three questions to answer, but I mumbled them off. Yes, yes. What time's good for you? And I did it. And I do it to this day. Now my sponsor, I had to change sponsorship this year. Or I chose to change sponsorship this year for certain reasons. And I went with who was my grand sponsor when I came in. And now he's added another question. And I love this guy because he's sober 38 years. And if he always asks you, what do you think I've done different? And I'm like, nothing. The program hasn't changed. Done the same thing. So he added a fourth question on there. Are you willing to admit that my judgment on your life is far superior to your own? That's good, man. I mean, remember, these people are very ill. They're quick. Whenever I got back with my sponsor and I had something smart to say, or I'm like, and he knew I wasn't doing anything, he'd say, you wanted what I have. Let me assure you, I don't want a damn thing you got. You asked me for help, right? So now you're at your first visit. You see your man alone, if possible, right? Not in a crowded room. That's intimidating. General conversation, you know, they go through a whole page where they're telling us how we're the actor and we destroy stuff. Now we get to be the actor again. It's saying, see the guy's mood. If he's serious, maybe I should be a little serious with him. If he wants to joke and chalk it up, maybe I should laugh, talk about the stuff we've done, you know? I've got to play the actor. We want him to be comfortable. We want them to feel like this is a place they come. If I'm an alcoholic, man, I've sat in meetings where somebody comes in and they're like drinking an airplane bottle and everybody's like, oh my God, he's drinking in the meeting. You get him out. What do we do? If I'm an alcoholic and I can't come to Alcoholics Anonymous and feel comfortable, we've gotten screwed, right? We've learned so far in the reading that if he's drinking that airplane bottle, it's probably not the best time to talk to him. But we shouldn't shun him. Maybe he'll come back the next day when he's not drinking, when he's out. It also tells me to say nothing for how I accomplished where I'm at right now. I'm not the great priest. Hey, it's your first day in AA. You got to find God. But dwell on the troubles liquor has caused you. It's very important because it doesn't tell me to come in the meeting and raise my hand and share and dwell on the troubles liquor. This is when speaking with the new man for the first time. Like John said, we've all been there. I could sit here and tell stories for hours and hours. What's that going to benefit anyone trying to get sober? Look at me and say, yeah, dumbass, I've done that too. That's why it's anonymous all of a sudden. And then get him to tell some of his. And, you know, my sponsor still tells me this. Listen to learn and learn to listen. Because I listen to respond all the time. I still do. Justin's nodding his head because me and him are good at it. We're waiting for somebody to say something. And we're going to come back on them, you know. But I've got to keep that in mind, right? This guy's going to open up to me. Shut up and listen. That's all I got. Thanks for letting me share.
Thanks
for sharing.
Reading number 3 is on page 91. When he sees you know all about the drinking game, commence to describe yourself as an alcoholic. Tell him how baffled you were, how you finally learned that you were sick. Give him an account of the struggles you made to stop. Show him the mental twist which leads to the first drink of a spree. We suggest you do this as we have done it in the chapter on alcoholism. If he is alcoholic, he will understand you at once. He will match your mental inconsistencies with some of his own. If you are satisfied that he is a real alcoholic, begin to dwell on the hopeless feature of the malady. Show him from your own experience how the queer mental condition surrounding the first drink prevents normal functioning of the willpower. Don't, at this stage, refer to the book unless he has seen it and wishes to discuss it. And be careful not to brand him as an alcoholic. Let him draw his own conclusion. If he sticks to the idea that he can still control his drinking, tell him that possibly he can, if he is not too alcoholic. But insist that if he is severely afflicted, there may be little chance he can recover by himself.
Man, yeah, no one can convince us we're alcoholics. I had every indication that I was an alcoholic. I mean, from all this, the court troubles, the genetics, the wife telling me, my mom telling me, I mean, everyone, the Commonwealth of Virginia labeled me a habitual drunkard and made it illegal for me to possess alcohol. If that's not a sign that I'm an alcoholic and I can't see it, then I mean, that's just part of that queer mental twist, you know? But I couldn't believe it. I couldn't accept it. I still thought I could control it. I still thought I could figure it out. That's the insanity of it. And I was willing to pursue it into the gates of insanity or death. And it's like it takes that beating. It takes the alcohol just beating me into that state of reasonableness, beating me into that state of willingness, you know? Because that's the only thing that convinced me otherwise, that I was really an alcoholic. I was really what you guys were talking about. And that's what convinced me that I really wanted what you guys had, because I saw people, you know, coming and going from AA or really staying in AA for long periods of time and actually having long-term recovery. And I finally wanted that. And that's what brought me back in here. And so I fully believe that step one is completed out there, you know. It's only when we're, you know, willing to finally do something different and finally willing to admit that we're really alcoholics and we must have this, you know, like it says in the forwards, you know, if you're really an alcoholic, we must have this thing. And so that gift of desperation got me in here. I didn't know what to do from there. I didn't know how to address the whole God thing, because like Mike as well, I had God in my life my whole life. I was raised in the church, but I didn't want nothing to do with it. I had a big resentment towards God. And that was part of the fear that kept me out of here, because I knew that was part of it. I know you guys say God a lot in here, but I was willing to figure that part out later. You know, I was like, I'll get to that part when we get to that part, you know. And the book sums up my drinking more than I could ever put into words. And the book gives me the solution more than anything. People say, oh yeah, I've read that book. Yeah, it's a good book. Yeah, one time, one and done, you're it. That's it. This book saved my life and continues to save my life. This book lays it out for me in black and white. Clear-cut directions are found in this book. You know, this is specifically what we've done, and we've been able to recover from alcoholism. And I didn't even know you could recover, like we talked about. You know, I thought you were once an alcoholic, always an alcoholic. And yes, that's true, but I don't have to fight it like I used to. You know, whenever I'd get sober before, it was a fight. It was a struggle. It was a real struggle just to get a couple of hours. And then there, man, I couldn't even put together more than a few hours at a time, let alone more than a day, because it was a fight. It was a struggle. And once I surrendered and was willing to put in the work, and I took these steps, some point or another, I don't know when it happened, and it was sometime after I took these steps, that desire to put anything in my body left. You know, God removed that from me. And I haven't had that desire return. And I know that I have this daily reprieve that's contingent on my spiritual condition. It's contingent on me doing this work and continuing to stay in constant contact with my higher power, which I call God, and continuing to stay involved in the fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous as a willing participant in my own recovery by going to meetings, by sharing this message, carrying this message, and helping other people that were just like me, that were just once as hopeless as I was, because I was hopeless for a long time. And I love how it talks about the queer mental condition, because I knew I was a different type of drinker, but I didn't know why I could never, you know, I could stop and stay stopped. And then the book, like I said, sums it up and tells me about my alcoholism more than I ever could. And I just want to go flip back. I know we're not on that, but this line is the most, it's just one of the lines in the book that I go back to all the time, because it tells me all about that mental condition. And it says, the fact is that most alcoholics, for reasons yet obscure, have lost the power of choice in drink. Our so-called willpower becomes practically non-existent. We are unable at certain times to bring into our consciousness with sufficient force the memory of the suffering and humiliation of even a week or a month ago. We are without defense against the first drink. That's from page 24. That sums it up more than I could ever sum it up. That hits me so hard, because that is exactly what happens to me every time. I forget how bad my life really gets. All I can remember is the good stuff. All I can remember is you know, the feeling I get from it. And I can't ever remember how bad it truly gets. And man, that's just the mental fuckery. And once I was, you know, reading this book and doing this with my sponsors, like, man, it's all making so much sense. And I don't want to keep rambling, but man, again, this book, The Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous, and the 12-step work, it's saving my life every single day. Thanks for letting me share.
Thanks.
Yeah, tell them how baffled you were, how you finally learned. You know, I love that line John read. I stared at this every time I raised my hand, because that was the line that really stuck. You know, no matter what I've been through, when that obsession takes over and the delusion that I can drink like other people, or next time I forget everything that's happened to me. One of my other favorite lines in the book, and my sponsees will tell you I say that on every page, but one of my other favorite lines is in Fred's story, and it sums it up so good. It was the end of a perfect day, not a cloud on the horizon. And then what's he do? He steps over a threshold and he goes and gets drunk, and he's drunk, drunk, drunk. Yeah. And I love that you said that. There is not. Oh, man, now you're going to get me on. The word trigger is such bullshit. I remember being in rehab, and, you know, they're like, or I was locked up somewhere, I don't know. And they were like, so make a list of your triggers. And I'm like all screwed up coming off. And I'm like, waking up alive. And that line sums it up. It was the end of a perfect day. You know, If it's sunny out, I'm gonna drink to cool down. If it's cold out, I'm gonna drink to warm up. If I had a bad day, I'm gonna drink because I'm pissed off. If I had a great day, I'm gonna drink to celebrate. I'm gonna drink. If I'm an alcoholic, the obsession's gonna take over and I'm gonna drink. And that's the stuff at this stage I want to talk to him about. I don't want to say the stuff out of the book. You know, it's funny when my sponsor was telling me all this stuff, and I'm like, oh man, and I thought he was like a wizard, man. And then I then I started reading the book and I'm like, this, you're reading out the book. But you know, I was told when I read this book, look out for the word if, but, must, vital, requirement, you know, small words like that. And this, these two paragraphs are full of the if one. I love it. If he is an alcoholic, he will understand you, right? If not, he ain't gonna understand. You're probably wasting your time. Walk on away. If you are satisfied that he's a real alcoholic, right? We can't tell anyone if they're alcoholic or not, but I can tell you what, I've been doing this long enough and helped enough men, tried to help enough men, that I can tell if you're just in here getting the monkey off or you're an alcoholic, right? So if I'm satisfied, begin to dwell on the hopelessness, you know? If this guy's in a state of hopelessness and he's got that short bit of time, we start to dwell on it, right? That's what I love about that. I don't know how many people I've sponsored up taking 100 or so guys through the steps. And every time I get a new one, I start reading this. It's like, I need my step-by-step instructions on how to do this because I'm going to do it wrong because I'm still an alcoholic and I think I'm going to fuck it up. But there's nothing I can screw up. I mean, it's kind of hard to screw one of us up. Very important, from your own experience. I can't share your experience. And if I try to, I'm lying. This program demands one thing, rigorous honesty, right? I've only got my experience to share. If he sticks to the idea he can still control his drinking, tell him possibly he can. Hey, good for you, go try. And I was never so baffled. I was about a month and a half sober or something. And me and my sponsor are talking to this guy after the meeting, and the guy's doing his, you know, the game people play. And he goes, hey, here's $20. Bar's right there. Go give it a whirl. And I'm like, hey, hey, you can't do that. He's like, the book tells me to do that. And if he's severely afflicted, there may be little chance he can recover by himself. Because it's a wee program. This isn't a self. You know, one of the greatest things my sponsor and the men in my line did to me is they told me the truth. They didn't pat me on the back and say, go to 90 and 90, you'll feel better. Fake it till you make it. They told me, Mike, you're dying. Look at your life. Look at what you've told me to this point. You're on a path to die. You know what? After I put that gun in my mouth, I found out I don't want to be dead. I didn't want to be dead that day. This program's given me so much power to walk with my head high. And I didn't do shit, man. God did it. I just followed some directions. Thanks for letting me share.
Thanks for sharing, Mike.
All right, I'm gonna leave the last couple readings for the big book, and then we'll go through the closing. But thank you all. Continue to speak on alcoholism as an illness, a fatal malady. Talk about the conditions of the body and mind which accompany it. Keep his attention focused mainly on your personal experience. Explain that many are doomed who never realize their predicament. Doctors are rightly loath to tell an alcoholic patient the whole story unless it will serve some good purpose. But you may talk to him about the hopelessness of alcoholism because you offer a solution. You will soon have your friend admitting he has many, if not all, of the traits of an alcoholic. If his own doctor is willing to tell him that he is alcoholic, so much the better. Even though your protege may not have entirely admitted his condition, he may become very curious to know how you got well. Let him ask you that question, if he will. Tell him exactly what happened to you. Stress the spiritual feature freely. If the man be agnostic or atheist, make him empathetic that he does not have to agree with your conception of God. He can choose any conception he likes, provided it makes sense to him. The main thing is that he be willing to believe in a power greater than himself and that he lives spiritual principles. When dealing with such a person, you had better use everyday language to describe spiritual principles. There is no use arousing any prejudice he may have against certain theological terms and conceptions about which he may already be confused. Don't raise such issues, no matter what your convictions are. So I'm going to pass around the seven tradition baskets now. You can sign up for emails on our website at www.simpleactions.net. We have a PayPal and Venmo links in those baskets as well, and as well on Zoom. The seventh tradition states every AA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. While contributions cover each group's rent and other expenses, the seventh tradition is essential at every level of AA service. It is both a privilege and a responsibility for groups and members to ensure that not only their group, but also their intergroup, central office, local services, district area, and the general service office remain self-supporting. This keeps AA free of outside influence that might divert us from our primary purpose, to help the alcoholic who still suffers. Our common welfare, a word about safety. Our group endeavors to provide a safe meeting place for all attendees and encourages each person here to contribute to fostering a secure and welcoming environment in which our meeting can take place. Announcements. Are there any AA-related announcements?
Hey, Justin.
If you're interested in taking meetings in the correctional facilities in Tidewater, please.
Thank you.
Mike.
Thank you. Mike. Elizabeth.
Hey, Elizabeth.
Any other announcements? All right, Simple Actions is a home group. If you're interested in joining our home group or in need of a sponsor, please hang out after the meeting. Home group members, raise your hand. The literature is available on the table over there. If you're interested in a book, see a home group member or me. I'll be up here. Sponsorship question. Sponsorship in AA is yours for the asking. We urge you, do not delay. If you have questions or like additional information about sponsorship, I will be available up here after we close the meeting. Please feel free to come up and ask questions, or you can send an email to info@simpleactions.net if you're afraid to talk or if you're on Zoom. Reminder, smokers, please use the butt can provided outside. Stay well away from the church doors. All meeting audio recordings and upcoming events are posted on our website, simpleactions.net. Meeting after the meeting, all are invited and encouraged to join us for fellowship at the meeting. After the meeting will be held at Cafe Stella, 20th and Colonial. And let's see. Again, let's thank John and Mike for coming. Again, after the Lord's Prayer, everyone have a chance to thank them. Rick has volunteered to read the last two.
Hey, Rick.
If your own house, but obviously see to it that your relationship and great events, this is a great fact. Abandon yourself to God, get your balls to him, clear away the wreckage, give freedom of what you find. We shall be with you. And you, as God bless you.
Thanks, Rick. Thanks, Rick. We have a great way of closing. We'll make somewhat of a circle and say the Lord's Prayer. Yeah, whatever your definition of a circle. I'm long.
Is that a rock?
Our Father.
Our Father, who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done, on earth as it is in heaven.
Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. Lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. Thine is the kingdom, power, and glory, forever and
ever. Amen.
Brittany, oh, she just.